as you said before, like, it makes sense this year to focus on the track being an Olympic year. How would you at this point, like, normally kind of make your own race schedule with all this freedom that you have?
I don't know. I'm making it seem like I'm just like, oh, like, let's have fun. I'm super serious about running, though. Like, I train super hard. I'm very focused. Like, I do everything I can to be my best, but I also want it to be enjoyable for myself. And so earlier this year, indoor track just wasn't really appealing to me, so I did cross. Like, I'm still racing as hard as I can. It's just a different discipline. But yeah, this fall, I'll be doing...
Coffee club, grind your beans and grab your favorite mug. It's Ollie Morgan, George and Gus, it's them boys from Coffee Club. Coffee Club.
Hello everybody and welcome back to the Coffee Cup Podcast for episode 154. Morgan here. This week we're doing things a little bit different. So I'm actually in Ethiopia right now, so we're not filming the regular episode, but instead we do have something very special. We have an interview that Ollie and I conducted in the studio probably about 3 or 4 months ago now with Ali Ostrander. And we've just kind of had this one banked, saved for a time like this when it was going to be hard to record. And we had a great time. So we're very excited to share it with you. And we hope you all enjoy it. And yeah, that's it. Enjoy. Hello, everybody. We are back. My name is Morgan McDonald. I'm joined by Ollie. No George today. He's overseas. Well, he's about to come back in a couple of days. But unfortunately, it didn't line up for this very special guest that we have today. We have on Miss, you're not married yet.
Not married.
Yet. Ali Ostrander. Ali, how you doing?
Good, good. I'm excited to be on, you know.
Have you listened to the show before?
I have listened to clips. I've never watched a full episode, but to be fair.
They're pretty long, yeah.
I don't really listen to running podcasts because I just feel like I'm already so
involved
in the running world that, like, I need to find other things to be interested in too.
Smart. Good for the sanity.
Yeah, that's the hope.
Yeah. Do you watch other running YouTube in general, or you stay away?
I kind of, like, I watch Spencer's, got a support,
mm-hmm,
but other than that, like, not a lot. Yeah, every once in a while. I watched your channel when you had it. We started YouTube at the same time.
Yeah, I do remember that. And then,
I remember watching your What I Eat in a Day video. It was pretty funny.
Thank you. Look at us now.
With Spencer's, do you watch and give constructive criticism? Or do you literally just watch and just be like, oh, that's pretty? Do you be like, oh, you should do this next time on your YouTube?
I would only give, like, constructive criticism before he posts it. You know, like, if he's editing and he asks me about something, then I would be like, oh, yeah, this and this. But, like, once it's posted, I feel like it's just, I'm not going to be like, you should have done this, this.
It would be funny, though, if you did that, because, yeah, he'd probably come back at your YouTube and it's like, well, you should have done this. And
I should start leaving comments of, like, at 1:26, really should have cut this clip a little bit sooner.
Yeah. Try to get everyone in the comments on your side. Yeah. Like, who's with me? Come on, he can do a little better here.
Watch my channel for better editing.
Oh, that's so funny. I guess we should give some context and then we'll get back to just talking about the athlete special. So how do you, you're Ali Ostrander, you're very, very well known. You have a big profile. You're very transparent. Like, you have so many, you're very beloved in the sport just because of, I think, the way that you've been able to share your story across the years, both the ups and the downs. Right now, how do you kind of introduce yourself to people that are asking? Well, I guess maybe you don't get asked this question, but do you say I'm a pro runner? Do you say I'm a YouTuber? Do you just kind of, like, go for, like, some mix of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it kind of depends on who I'm talking to, because, like, outside of the sport, people don't really understand, like, pro running. So then I'll just be like, oh, like, I am a runner. I do running YouTube kind of thing. I struggle to know, like, which one I identify more strongly with. Like, am I a pro runner? Am I an influencer? I don't really know. I also think there's this weird dichotomy where people have a negative view of influencers and pro runners are like, oh, influencers so annoying, like, yada yada. I don't know. I don't necessarily agree with that, but yeah, it's definitely hard because I don't really know which one I fall more strongly into.
Yeah, well, whichever one it is, what's very cool about what you do is, it, like, you have a very successful YouTube channel, you have a very successful Instagram, and you're able to, from what it seems like, kind of live your dream based off that. You know, like if you're a pro runner, you're also like living the dream. Like, that's an amazing lifestyle. But there's something different about what you do, where you have kind of this freedom. And I guess there's positives and negatives to that, because, like, you know, your income depends on like making a video every week, how the video does. And that can definitely be, is that stressful? I mean, that was really stressful for me when I stopped after, I think I did 9 or 10 weeks of videos in a row. And then I was like, this is too much for me. I can't do it.
Yeah. I think sometimes it's stressful. I definitely go through periods where I get a little bit burnt out, and then periods where I'm like super excited about the content I'm putting out and it feels really easy. Right now I'm in a period where it feels really easy. So I'm like, yeah, it's great. It's yeah. never bad. Yeah. And I've forgotten about like the times where I'm just stressed and don't want to do it. But yeah, I think it's kind of nice, because when I left Brooks Beast, I was like, okay, I never again want to put myself in a situation where it's not going to be the absolute best thing for me. I want to make sure that I have the flexibility to prioritize my own like health, performance, happiness, all of that. And so like being able to have my YouTube channel and Instagram kind of gives me more flexibility, because I can be like an individual instead of needing to like move with the sort of team structure.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. What happens when you get to a time when it's challenging to like post a video that week? Do you post, are you strict about posting like one video a week? Like, what's your schedule like normally?
I try to do every 5 or 6 days. But there are some months where it might be 7 or 10 days, or like some videos are kind of more deep dives and involve a lot more like time and research, in which case sometimes I'll just take longer to post. Yeah, like it depends on the month for how many brands I have that I need to put into a video. And so like sometimes it's kind of like, look, you got to stick to this schedule. And sometimes I have more flexibility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I reckon that having Spence, your boyfriend, also doing the same thing, and he's been doing it for how many years is he at now?
I think he's been doing
2019
it
at least.
8 years.
8 years. Well, yeah. Way back. I reckon having him, like, you know, as a big part of your life and on the exact same schedule, that's probably the nicest possible thing, because like just in my brief experience trying to consistently put out content, pretty much the only reason I was able to do it is because at the time I was on training camp with Nick Harris, and we were both like in that mindset of like create. Like Nick, he's a musician. I mean, he's so many things. Like, he's a musician. He really understands like creating, like, mm-hmm. and art. And I mean, YouTube art, whatever you want to, like, I don't know. There's some debate whether like that's the same thing, but he really understands like the grind, the process. And so just to have someone in your life every day who's really supportive of what you're trying to do, like, that was probably the main reason why we were able to together like put out videos once a week. So I imagine having the two of you like both switched on, both like doing the same thing, that's gonna be like the nicest thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, Spencer's the whole reason I started YouTube. Basically, I was running professionally, and I don't know if you guys have experienced this, but I think a lot of the time professional runners are kind of bored. Like, you don't have a lot to do. You obviously train a ton, you're tired from that. It's a full-time job. But you do have free time where you kind of want to do something, or at least I did.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw him editing, and I was like, oh, I should just like, I don't have anything to do while he's editing. I might as well just start my own channel.
Why not?
And so I did, and he's been super supportive, and he showed me the ropes to start out with, you know, taught me editing. And now we're able to like film each other's workouts, film each other's videos, help each other make thumbnails, and like understand the behind the scenes of it and kind of the hard parts, because a lot of people just have never experienced it. So they don't really know, like when you say, oh, like it's really stressful, I have to like get this video out this week. Most people are like, what are you even talking about? Just like, you're making a YouTube video. Your job is so easy. Like,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so it's nice to have someone that understands that it can be hard sometimes.
Yeah. That is something that's really interesting to bring up, because yeah, I think there's a big difference between like being a viewer and being like the creator, you know, like when you watch the TV show, you're not normally thinking about like everything that went into it. And it's like hard to imagine how much goes into it. And now YouTube is at that point where I think most people are aware of this,
but especially, you know, the big videos, like how much fucking money people and time and effort people are putting into them is so, it's just so crazy. Like the level of quality that you find on YouTube. Is that something that you, or maybe the two of you, do you enjoy getting into like that kind of side of it? Or is that something that you kind of like shield yourself away from and you're just like, I'm just going to make videos how I want to make them and just try focus on consistency?
Yeah, I think that even I've only been on YouTube for 3.5 years. And even in that time, I've noticed a huge difference in the quality that is on YouTube. And I feel like I'm motivated to increase my own quality because of that. But I definitely have never considered myself an artistic person. YouTube has brought out more of a creative side in me, but I lean more towards the storytelling side of things versus towards the cinematic side of things. But obviously I know videos are better to watch if they look good. So I want them to be cinematic and well edited, and I'm kind of just learning as I go.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the best way to do it, huh?
Yeah.
My first video was with Ollie. Well, it was definitely one of the first ones.
The Mountain Dew Mile.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You probably haven't seen that one.
That one's like very, very far back in the archives. But
is that at Wisco?
No, it was Morgan and I moved to Boulder in 2020.
Yeah.
Right.
Peak COVID.
It was peak COVID, nothing was going on. Dathan wanted to do like a mile, kind of just like a time trial mile race. And Morgan filmed it and kind of made like a little storyline out of it. And it was kind of funny because we were just dicking around a little bit. But it was also kind of cool because we ran unofficial sub 4 in Colorado. Me and Joe.
Yeah.
Joe and I.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it was kind of like, I don't know, it was cool seeing that aspect of just being a part of something like that. Because you definitely don't, like, I think when people look at any type of content like that, they probably think it's very easy to do, but it's not, and you do learn a lot. Like I'm sure, like Morgan, if you watch that episode and then you watch a lot of the Chicken Boy recent stuff, you can see like just the transforming of people, like, well, you just being able to like enjoy being creative, but also putting in different like layers.
Yeah, the reason I missed your DM was because I didn't realize your username was Chicken Boy Moore.
Oh, come on.
And I like...
You're like, so who's this freak?
No, like literally, because I guess it's like weird DMs sometimes. And I saw it and I was
lots
like...
Lots of chicken people.
I was like, oh, I guess I'll like maybe open this later or something. But like, not I important. Didn't think about it.
Anti-chicken.
And then I realized it was you.
That's actually hilarious. Yeah, it's Chicken Boy Moore show. But the funny thing with that video is like, I think that video stands off really well. And maybe you've seen this. Where, like, the editing on that video is obviously way worse. Like, it's not a very necessarily well-made video, but it's still really enjoyable to watch because it's, like, a good story and it's just a special moment. And I think, I don't know, maybe when you say that it's really easy for you to make videos right now, I can tell why. And it's because, like, watching your videos right now, you have such a compelling storyline, you know, to each video that you make, because you're like here in Boulder, specific training camp, you're like leading into the Olympic trials. Like every video is so like, you know, it's just nice to have such a coherent storyline, especially when you post as much as you do. I think everyone following along is like very, very engaged in what you're doing right now. So it's just funny. It's something that I've found, like you can get way better at editing, but there's something about what we do. There's a magic to it, which is like, you can't always just like, you know,
replicate it
up. You gotta just be there, able to capture those great moments, you know what I mean?
And I think that like increasing the quality of your video, quality of audio, quality of editing is all good, but you have to focus on the heart of it first, because that's what, you know, people want to see, and that's what I enjoy like putting out into the world. I mean, analytics and stuff, you guys probably experienced this with the podcast, like analytics can be like absorbing sometimes, and I try to as much as I can like not even look at that and just be like, I made something I'm proud of, it's out there, and now I can't control it, so I just kind of have to like accept whatever happens.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, me and George particularly don't really know what's going on.
No, I don't check analytics
and
either.
Like Morgan
that's good, don't start.
We'd ask Morgan's like, oh, how did that video do, or like how did, and then Morgan's like, I don't know. And then, we usually have Tom that, like...
It's not good. Yeah. Even, like, if I make... I mean, with the podcast, it's more of just a consistent thing. It's like, we're going to make a video, like, once a week. We're going to put out an episode. And I think because it's that style, there's less fluctuation in like how a video performs. We still have, I mean, if we have like one of the young brothers on, it's still like, his, you know, gets a shit ton more views or something like that. But it's pretty consistent. Whereas YouTube is not quite like that. There, some videos will pop off. And even like myself, I try really hard to be the type of person who's like, yeah, I don't care about this at all. Like, I just make videos like when I can and when I want to and when I feel like happy to do it. And even like with that mindset, if I post a video and then it doesn't do well, then I still feel sad.
Yeah, no, I know. I say this right now. I'm like, yeah, I try to like not look at analytics, but when my videos like flop, of course, I'm like, why do I do it? Like, yeah. I just should stop making videos. People hate me. Like, yeah. They hate me.
No, but I can tell that you have such a good fan base. I think you get so many like nice comments on all your videos, and I feel like getting a lot of comments is to me that's like the best sign.
Yeah,
yeah, I appreciate that so much, and that's another thing. I'm like, even if a video does bad, I'm like, okay, like let's look at the comments. People are saying nice things, yeah. Like they liked the video. It's okay, but yeah, I feel like YouTube is pretty wholesome for the most part. Mm-hmm. Instagram is a mixed bag, like not always wholesome. We'll put it at that. So
that's a nice way to put it, considering like a lot of stuff on Instagram, like a lot of it, like you'd see a lot of like people posting content, and then the comments would come up and it's like, wow, I did not expect to see comments like this.
Yeah, or like sometimes when stuff goes viral, it's for like a negative reason.
Yeah, true. That's happening a lot recently on social media, which is not, I mean, particularly Instagram, I've noticed. It's kind of weird.
I don't know. Instagram is
crazy. But YouTube's still wholesome. That's because it's OG. YouTube's like the best. Yeah. I love YouTube. So
it's also because when people watch a YouTube video, they're like invested because it's longer. Whereas on Instagram, they watch 4 seconds and they're like,
Instagram,
I know who you are and I hate you.
Yeah, well, Instagram also has the discover thing where you just like flipping through things without the real stuff.
Yeah.
Whereas in YouTube, you can like look at things, like look up things, and then you find something. And then usually when you click on something, you're engaged in like being, I don't know, interested in it. Whereas in YouTube, could just be in your face all of a sudden. And then it can just.
If you watch a 10-minute video of someone, especially when it's like vlog format or, and like your videos or kind of like what I was posting where it's more personal, I think it's pretty hard for someone to get to the end of that video and then be like, man, I hate this person.
I hate them so much. Yeah. I'm going to let them know.
I mean, I guess there's probably certain videos out there where you're like, wow, this guy's kind of like a douchebag or whatever. But I think the people that are watching like your videos, they're like, wow, like this chick is awesome. She's so cool. Like, I'm very big fan. I don't know. It's hard not to be.
Well, they probably click on like other videos you make. Like usually when I find creators that I really like, I'd like a video and then I'm like, oh, I'm going to watch like an old one. And you probably get like a bit of a backlog of people like going through your story that maybe they saw a recent video, but they're like, oh, I want to know what this was about. And then go back in time a little bit.
Whenever I find a YouTube I like, I'm like, I'm just going to go watch every video.
Yeah. Been in. And then you get pissed when you run out. You're like, damn it, they haven't posted anything.
I know. And then I'm like, post again. Come on.
Do you have any like big, or not necessarily big, any creators or YouTubers that you enjoy watching and that inspire you that you could name?
I love Natasha Ocean. I don't know who that is. She's from the UK. And she makes like fitness kind of YouTube, but she's like someone that I think is super artistic. So her videos, she's amazing and athletic, but also her videos are like beautiful and just so well edited. And I get a lot of inspiration too, like from watching YouTube, I kind of learn things of like, oh, I love what she did here. Like maybe I can try to do that sort of thing. And I actually used to just search her channel when I was trying to make thumbnails. And I'm like, I'm just going to look at what she did because, wow.
It's the way to do it. I mean, if it's working for someone else, it's like, that's how you learn as well. Just trying to imitate the best.
Yeah. And then I really like Lucy Charles Barclay. She's an Ironman triathlete and she makes like training and videos and stuff. She was a world champ last year. So I just think it's cool that she like shares her training and she's very hardcore, which is inspirational.
Mm-hmm. Are you happy that you've kind of, I mean, there's people who've been making YouTube videos forever. Like you mentioned Spence making them for 8 years, but even now it feels like there's so many more and it's becoming like just a little bit more oversaturated. Are you happy that you're kind of like ahead? Like you have, since you've been making them for a few years and you have this nice backlog of videos, like you look pretty legit. Whereas I see so many people like runners making YouTube videos now, and this thing is like they're really good videos, but it's like you're just not gonna, there's just too many people like doing it now.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, I don't think there will ever be like too many. If if you have quality videos and you're consistent for years, I think you can build a following.
Mm-hmm.
There's always going to be demand for it, but I'm definitely happy that I got in when I did. Because like you said, I feel like in the last year even, I've seen so many new people start making videos.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think if I started now, it'd be a lot harder.
Particularly in the pro running scene, I feel like a lot of like really good high profile runners that never touched YouTube are now making YouTube videos. I mean, Elliot Giles makes YouTube videos.
Elliot Giles, Jake Wyman. I mean,
those guys are like, I'm pretty sure they're pretty recent.
This guy
called
Jakob had a reality TV
show. Yeah, Jakob's true. But there are people that like, and I think I've seen
so many.
Yeah, when I've been at Diamond Leagues, I've seen people followed with like crews, proper crews and photographers and stuff now, and they were definitely not doing that a few years ago. So it's like a very recent thing, I think, just because they can see the value in what like you and Morgan and Spence have been doing. It's like it's a really good way to build a fan base, but also just be creative and like enjoy the process of like being in a unique position as to what we do, which is pretty cool. Like being able to.
Well, even if you are a pro runner, it's essentially in some ways it's your job, you know. Like it's funny when you were talking before about how like some pro runners like look down on influencers, but the reality is both a pro runner's contract and if a brand is doing like a deal with an influencer, they're both coming out of like a marketing budget of like let's say On, for example, you know. So they're competing for the same kind of
a professional runner is somebody that's getting paid to run. If you're an influencer and you run, mm-hmm. you're getting paid for it, aren't you a professional?
You know, well, no, it's a different thing, but it's coming. It's all marketing.
Yeah.
Would you say you're a marketing runner? I don't know. It's interesting because, like, okay, so the way I'm thinking about it is in a way in which this is like getting into celebrity shit, but sorry. But, you know, like, there was a recent thing at the Met Gala where influencers, particularly TikTok influencers, like weren't invited anymore, but like they were actually like they're actual celebrities. Like those people are so famous, a lot of the people that do a lot of content creation on TikTok, and then there's actually like there's celebrities in movies, music and just like general that kind of celebrity, but then there's a celebrity of TikTok, but it's the same kind of they're still celebrities, you know. So like wouldn't they be in that position anyway because they're getting paid or because they're making content, whether it's music, film, whatever.
Yeah,
I feel like that's like it's just a new avenue that we're seeing because of social media or whatever.
Yeah.
I feel like influencing and running is a similar thing, whereas like I mean a lot of pro runners now are doing influencing on their social media platforms because that's what brands want.
Yeah, I mean some brands like require professional runners to post about like product launches and stuff like that. I mean I have some contracts that are performance based and some that are social media based, and I don't know, I don't feel like it's that different. Like I'm required to post for social media stuff, but like as a professional runner, you also want to be having a presence because then you're more valuable to the brand that's paying you to run. So the lines are probably going to get more and more blurred.
Yeah.
The reality is like, it's all about storytelling.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like whether you're, if you see someone run an amazing time, like that's, I guess that is impressive and that's cool in some way, but you're going to be so much more pumped, so much more hyped about it if you have some context for it, some backstory.
Well, the example you always use is Jakob's reality TV because it's like perfect. Like they started when he was, 12?
Yeah, he started so young. Last episode is him winning Olympic gold.
Like, it's like, perfect storytelling.
I watched the whole show.
It's almost like the perfect, like it just doesn't, like it's amazing. So that kind of story makes people so much more invested in that journey. Whereas if he didn't have that show or didn't have that kind of exposure and like everyone was like, oh, cool, he's 21, he won the Olympic Games gold medal. That's pretty cool. But if you were watching the documentary, you're so much more invested in, or you see it and you're just like, wow, this is, it's way more investment in the journey.
Yeah.
Fun fact, I just watched that race video like half an hour ago. I don't know why.
Really?
Of the Olympics?
The 2021, the Olympic final, the 1500.
Oh, that was a tough final.
You were in a good spot, man. Yeah. I know you were tired.
I was so burnt out.
I know
bro.
You were tired, but you positioned yourself. Really
yeah, I did.
Race.
And then they were running 3:29, and I was not in that shape. Maybe it was in
that
shape.
That was but. Like the, like kind of when I feel like the 1500 at World Champs kind of switched from like, before that a lot of races were more tactical, and now I feel like it's fast and tactical.
It's
been so fast.
100%. I think it's a very different event now, and that was definitely the start of it. I think I've always mentioned on the pod, but like Matt Centro's win In Rio, I think that was the catalyst for it. Just watching him win that and run like
it was 350 something.
350 something. Yeah, like something that like you probably would even make it through the first round of the NCAA's West preliminary now running that time. So
usually not.
It's just it's just like people see that and then it's just completely shifted in the other way. So
yeah.
But those like that race was crazy.
But the reason it's so cool even now to go back and just watch that race is because I know everyone's story in that race like so well.
Yeah.
So it's still so
particularly like it. Even like Jake Whiteman, like he won the semi and everyone's like, oh, this guy's gonna medal, he could win.
Yeah.
Doesn't do well and then goes and wins Worlds the next year. It's pretty
coming through.
Chariot
was leading a good amount of that race and then now he's back good this year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I could just lean, dove to beat him. Yeah, that was a crazy one. Also, looking back at that race, like knowing what Jakob said about Josh's win is so funny because he's like, yeah, Josh just like basically JV kicked me, but he JV kicked Chariot in that race.
Yeah.
So I'm like, you know,
yeah, it's just racing, isn't it? It's just racing.
Every major win like that, like even Jake Whiteman, every major win in the 15's been like that, where the person's come through from behind. There hasn't been someone that's been able to hold off an attack on the final straight. I mean, it is like everyone's just so good.
Yeah,
you can't really make a mistake.
Well, we'll see what happens this year,
I guess. Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, it's going to be an exciting year.
It's going to be crazy. So we've talked a lot about the YouTube stuff already, and not that we're done with that, but maybe we could focus a little bit more on the running specifically.
Yeah.
You have such a... talking about your like the freedom that you have in terms of like doing your own social media stuff, it's really cool because then you're able to have freedom in terms of what races you do. And was it last year, like you were focusing on a lot of like trail stuff and now this year you're back on the track. Like we're not allowed to do that.
No, we're not allowed to do that. Even though I remember like there was a period particularly where we were very interested in like doing trails because trail running is like very big in Boulder and it's a very cool thing to do here, but we just weren't allowed to do it.
Yeah. But the reason you are here in Boulder is a big kind of altitude camp training for the Olympic trail steeplechase. Are you really enjoying like being back on the track, back in the doing the steeple and all that?
Yeah, it's been super fun. I think like I took a couple years off because it didn't sound fun at all to run track. But then this year, I mean, it's pretty typical like Olympic year. Everyone comes out of the woodwork. But like, I don't know. I'm actually really enjoying it. Like I get super excited to race. And once I finish, I can't wait to race again. And so that's a really good feeling to have. So yeah, I've been enjoying it a lot.
Yeah, and you like the steeple a lot?
Yeah, I do. I'm so rusty right now, though. Both the races I've done, I'm like watching the film back. I'm like, oh, that's horrendous. Oh, I want to barf looking at this. So I definitely need to improve my technique a little bit. But the steeple is really fun. I think it's a super dynamic race and one of those ones where you never know what's going to happen. So a little added excitement.
Yeah. One of our Discord, we have a little Discord. And we did ask them if they had any questions. One of the questions was specifically about the water jump because I guess you've been known to say how much you dislike the water jump. Is that true?
Well, in my last video, I was like, I literally might as well have cannonballed into this with like the amount of momentum that I kept coming out of it. It was so bad. I think I had one that was like a C+ and the rest were D's. Horrible.
Are you doing anything to help train the water jumps? It's like too much of a thing to like practice.
Yeah, I don't have access to barriers. So that's kind of difficult, but I wasn't planning to race another steeple before the trials, but I signed up for another one because I was like, I need just more practice over this, more practice in a pack, all of that. And so I think that hopefully it'll come back and I'll be able to do better. I think part of it was like that race. I was just going over the water jump kind of tentatively and you really have to attack it. So if I can just like keep speed going through, I think that'll solve a lot of the problems. Mm-hmm.
And one of the cool things about you being here is like because you live in Seattle, correct? Mm-hmm. Is here your coach lives, does he live in Boulder?
Yeah, yeah.
And I didn't realize like you were coached by, Ollie, you wouldn't know him by name. He's David, right?
Yeah.
David Roach?
Right, David Roach.
You wouldn't know him by name, but you would know him by appearance and by his famous, I don't know if it's a famous catchphrase, but he always is just very, very friendly when he runs past us around the res. He's the guy that always says, "You guys are awesome."
Wait, that's David.
Yeah, yeah. Like, he's so nice to us every time he runs past. I didn't realize he was coaching you. How did that all come about? Like, how did you find him?
So last year in my first trail race, I ran Pikes Peak Ascent, which for those people that don't know it, it's like 13.3 miles up Pikes Peak from Colorado Springs. So it's 7,000 something feet of elevation gain, and it gets up over 14,000.
Big time.
I finished that race thinking I would never do another trail race in my life. Like, it was so horrible. And I felt super underprepared, but at the same time, I'd been having workouts where I was like pretty confident that I was relatively fit. And David, just being the nice person he is, DM'd me after the race and was like, hey, it's so cool to see you on the trails. Like, Pikes Peak is a beast. You did really well. It's such a mixed bag for like what's going to happen with the altitude and everything. And I was in a panicked mood when I got this message, thinking like, what did I do wrong sort of thing. And so I like word vomited to him, like, basically, what do you think happened? Like, why, like, these were my workouts. What do you think I should have done? All this stuff. And so then we ended up getting on a phone call, and he kind of was just talking to me about the specifics of training for trails and how to make like road and track fitness transition over and all of that. And he was just super knowledgeable. And slowly, he was just giving me like hints and pointers, and slowly it just kind of turned into he was fully coaching me. Mm. Yeah.
Wow. Well, I don't know like everything about him, but from everything that I've seen, it seems like such an amazing match between his philosophies and your philosophies, like just in terms of like how like running and how it's like your life, you know, like priorities, like, and how running should like, I don't know, make your life better, make it happier, you know, and you should take it maybe not so seriously. He has so many good quotes, like, in every video. I watched the video of you guys running up Mags,
yeah,
together, and it was like a Q&A style video. What was his quote on fueling? I wrote it down. I can't remember what it is. Do you remember which one I'm talking about?
He was like, eat enough always, eat too much sometimes, and eat too little never.
Yeah. It's just little things like that. Like, I don't know, what is his background to be like, become like the coach that he is?
Yeah, I mean, he has a really interesting backstory because he's actually a licensed, or I don't even know if licensed is the right term, but lawyer.
Wow.
So he went to law school, passed the bar, worked in law for a few years, but he actually started off, he had a blog about running. And then through that, just people started wanting to be coached by him. So he kind of slowly got into coaching until eventually that became his full-time job. He stopped working as a lawyer. He also played football in college and then transitioned into trail running once he graduated and like won USA's when he, like, a couple years later. And yeah, like, he's just kind of gotten more and more involved in the community through, he also has a podcast now with his wife, Megan, and they both coach. And I just think through like the last 10 or so years of kind of being super involved in the sport and researching it a lot, he's just become super knowledgeable, and he's constantly just taking in all the latest like peer reviewed research and trying to put that into training. And yeah, he's just a cool guy.
Just a cool guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, I don't know, it's going to be pretty nice to finally, I don't know. Have you spent much time around him before now, this training camp?
I came 2 other times this year, but never for a full month. So mm-hmm. This has been amazing because he's paced my workouts, like the hard track workouts he's paced, which is so nice because, I mean, the downside of not being with a team is that sometimes you have to work out alone, and that's so much harder. But when Definitely. He paces, it's amazing. And he's also like so encouraging. He'll literally be like cheering for me while he's actively running my rep, which is both encouraging and disheartening because I'm like, how is this that easy for you?
I do love that positivity. If someone was doing that to me, I might get annoyed though.
Yeah, I can see. I can see a lot of runners getting annoyed at that because it's like, yeah, I'm actually hurting right now. How you have the ability to keep,
yeah, you know? Like, it was definitely an adjustment because at first I had that mindset where I was like, oh my gosh, like, I'm hurting so bad. Like, stop telling me I'm doing good. Like, I'm just trying to get through this. Like, I'm just surviving right now. But then over time, I think the more I've been coached by him and the more he's kind of like had an influence on my philosophy and mentality, the more I've been like, being negative is not going to make me feel better. Like, I think being positive is the best thing that I could possibly do for myself, even when things feel really hard. And so I slowly have kind of begun to love it. So mm-hmm.
So good. Well, I'm happy that you guys are getting in some good training time together.
Yeah.
Especially leading up to the big race. So you said you're doing one more race before USA's?
I have the Portland Track Festival steeple, and then I'm going to run a 1500 at Harry Jerome the weekend after.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Very cool. Very cool. Wow. Well, I don't know exactly when this episode will be like released in relation to those races, but we wish you the best of luck.
Thanks.
With all those. It's going to be very exciting. Unfortunately, the U.S. women's steeple has had quite a few injuries this year, so the field looks like it's going to be a big shakeup this year.
Yeah, it's kind of a changing of the guard,
yeah.
Which is exciting. Also sad, like I wish that Frerichs and Coburn were in the race because you always want it to be the strongest field possible and to really earn your spot. But yeah, it's definitely more open than it has been in past years, but also deeper than it's ever been.
Mm-hmm. And so aside from, as you said before, like it makes sense this year to focus on the track being an Olympic year. Outside of that, how would you at this point, like normally kind of make your own race schedule with all this freedom that you have?
Mm-hmm. Kind of just what sounds the best, most fun. Also, obviously, like, I don't know. I'm making it seem like I'm just like, oh, like, let's have fun. I'm super serious about running, though. Like, I train super hard. I'm very focused. Like, I do everything I can to be my best. But I also want it to be enjoyable for myself. And so earlier this year, indoor track just wasn't really appealing to me. So I did cross. Like, I'm still racing as hard as I can. It's just a different discipline. But yeah, this fall, I'll be doing trail racing. And then I think just at the end of the trail season, coming off the track season, I'll kind of decide what I want to do next year and see like what I'm feeling and then just plan from there. But so far, I've really enjoyed this track season. So I do see myself doing it again next year. But like, you know, you just have to play it by ear.
Yeah, that's got to be a tough thing. Because for us, it's like, I mean, obviously, Ollie's going to try run the 1500 this year, and obviously I'm going to try to focus on the 5k, but then when you start bringing in like trail races and all that, that's gonna, because you have to obviously train very differently. Well, I would imagine, is it pretty different?
I thought it was going to be super different, but according to David, he's like, I think that we only need 3 weeks to transition you from steeple to 2.5 hour trail races.
Wow.
So hopefully it works out. Blind faith going in right now, because yeah. I'm like, I'm literally training to run like 9 minutes. So this is going to be interesting.
How far are those trail races?
Most of the ones I do are between 25 and 30K. But there's so much up and down that they're, and like technicality, that they take quite a while, like usually 2.5 to 3 hours.
Wow. Are we going to do some of those, Ollie?
I mean, maybe if we don't tell Ritz, that's the way we can get away with it. I mean, like, I would love to do stuff like that, because I believe, like, being track athletes, like, obviously is amazing. But particularly where we live in Colorado, we don't really get to fully experience what it's like living here, being the type of athletes we are. Like, going into the mountains, doing those trail races, or just being able to experience how beautiful it is here. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, it's nice running around the track, but running through the trail, it's beautiful, right? And we don't get to do that. And also bring both sides of our lives together, like the competitive side, the running aspect, to be able to kind of do that and like fully just appreciate that would be something that I would love to do. And I know Morgan would love to do. And actually, a lot of our teammates would probably be really interested too, but it's just hard to...
We don't have that time,
I guess. Hard to find time to do it.
I mean, you guys should like look into Cirque Series, because there's some near here. Those are way shorter. And so like... And usually trails in the US are not super, super technical, so lower injury risk and... Yeah, I mean, if it's
that'd be the thing. If we got injured,
oh,
we'd get our heads cut off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'd be the worst thing ever.
They're like, you're injured, so we'll have to kill you.
Yeah. No other option. No other option.
I was really actively looking, because last year I was coming back from an injury, so I was on my own trajectory. And especially in those like first few weeks where I was just kind of getting back into workouts. So like I had decent fitness from easy running, but I was not yet doing super, super hard training. I really wanted to find a trail race to go do, but it's just, I couldn't find one. The only thing I got to do, which is kind of close to it at all, is I went and, do you know people would scramble like the flat irons?
I didn't know people did that, but.
So it's like, I don't know. I don't understand all the lingo in the trail world, but there's like, FKTs, faster known times and stuff. So people have it for like these different routes from the flat irons, and it's the second one is like the easiest one to do. And we had a friend last year who would always like take us up and do it. It's like a bit sketchy. Like it's not like super safe. So I definitely wouldn't do it like right now. Like it's not like the safest thing to go do. But one time I just sent it on that and I tried to get my fastest time on it. And I'm still sitting in number 10 on the Strava okay. leaderboard. So
it's pretty good.
I'm pretty happy with that.
Remember the first time we did it, we were like, we did not think about this. We're climbing up it.
Yeah, I want to try to give you perspective. It's like, it's climbing, but it's not really climbing because it's more flat, yeah. Still very steep. But like people have died on it and stuff because obviously you don't have any like safety equipment. But some people that are really good at it, like they'll just sprint up it. And you just sprint up like the flat iron. Have you ever like done any trail walks around there or anything?
I have not. I haven't seen it, but I can imagine what you're talking about because I'm always shocked by the surfaces trail runners will just run and sprint on. Or I don't think I'm that good at the technical aspect of it because I'm not very experienced, but some people just literally are like mountain goats.
That's like kind of the difference maker, I think, when you start, isn't it? Like you can, I mean, when you go up a trail, you're limited by like your heart and how... Yeah, like your fitness, but going down the trail, if you're like a mountain goat, those they just risking their life.
Yeah, they just rip. So. It's crazy.
yeah, that's probably what would really screw us over if we tried to do a race.
We'd have to
run up and then just walk back down or something.
Just walk it in.
Have you ever done any of those? Isn't there races that are just going up and it's like the what are they called?
VKs, like really steep kilometers.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never. Really done one. So there's one race in Alaska called Mount Marathon that is kind of a vertical K, but you also go down it. Mm. But it's like the same sort of like just really steep, like straight up. And then when I was in Chamonix, France last summer, I did the vertical kilometer course. Like there's a VK there every year, but I wasn't there during the time they were running it. So I did the course a few times and it's really cool. Like there's they're very steep, but
sounds really hard.
Yeah, they're fun though. Like sometimes when I'm hiking, I get annoyed because I'm like, well, I need to like run to actually get a good workout on this, but running up this grade is like miserable. So VKs are kind of fun because they're steep enough where like you hike and it's a good enough workout.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Damn. Well, post our track career, we'll try. Dabble.
We'll look into it.
Yeah. I mean, you guys could do VKs because then you don't have to walk it in. You just go up and
that'd be so
good
fun.
To go.
Yeah.
There is a race kind of like that. I mean, it's not a technical trail race at all, but there's a race in Australia called the Balmoral Burn, which like 800 meter runners are really good at. And it's literally just, I don't know how long it is. I think, let's say, for example, it's like a 400 meter race, but it's just on a really steep road. Mm. Just 400 meters up a hill.
Yeah. That sounds intense burn. Like, horrible, but
but a good time.
Yeah.
So we've definitely talked a lot about how you know, you're able to kind of make your running schedule in a way that suits you and is kind of designed at like, you know, happiness and like that's what it's optimized for. And you know, you've been such a big advocate for a lot of different like mental health issues and ED and stuff in the past. If there is someone who's like listening and, well, I don't know if that's the best way to ask this question. I'm going to ask it like this. Do you have, I don't know, maybe like a number of kind of core tenets that kind of guide the way that you operate in life and running now? Like if you had, say, like a list of rules that you apply to yourself that you think maybe someone else would find useful to hear. Like for me, for example, like on my list, like one of the rules is like, it's just running, you know? Those types of things. Do you have anything like that that guides you?
I don't really have a list necessarily, but one of my top things is just authenticity, like being really honest and truthful about like, you know, how I feel, what I'm going through, just life in general. And then for me, it's like, I've kind of like since recovering from an ED, like kind of tried to change the way that my brain processes like training, running, eating, like my body, all of that. And so for me, it's like fitness, like you're not exercising, you're working out, like you're going for these like performance goals, you're not going for aesthetic goals, and like keeping that mindset really strong.
That makes sense. I think one of the other things that that I remember your coach saying in one of your videos was just like, you should never train like not fueled. Mm-hmm. And I like that a lot, because that's actually something that in our training is relatively new as well. I think a lot of people have really just caught on to the fact that, you know, when you go do a hard workout or a long run, you like, if you fuel properly for it, it's just, you know, you're going to feel so much better. You're going to recover so much better. You get so much more out of it. So mm-hmm. I think that's just like, I don't know. I'm very happy that at least from what I've seen, that's been such a shift just in the last year or so, you know?
Yeah. Well, I also think like I would never go into a race having not eaten. So it's kind of like, why wouldn't you fuel all your training the same way? Like, you should be intentional all the time mm-hmm. and always want to get the most out of yourself. Like, obviously you're not going to go race effort every day, yeah. but like, it's still important to like have enough fuel to soak it in and recover and everything.
Yeah. Yeah. But I don't know. It's just nice that like things are, I don't know, getting more balanced. Cause I think they were pretty unbalanced at some point. Like, I don't know. We barely, like in college, we wouldn't even really drink water on a long run, you know? Like, that would be weird. I don't know if it was like that for you.
Oh, yeah, no. I never brought water.
Yeah.
No,
Whereas, never. Like, our runs are so funny now. Like, if you do a long run with us, we might stop at, like, 3 miles, 5 miles, 7 miles, 9 miles, like, on a long run just to, like, get in carbs because it's just such a
And we're not stopping for that long. But it's funny because, like, people, like, and it's just the progression of just, like, knowledge about it, I guess, too, with like, fueling and being prepared for that sort of stuff. But it's just funny seeing people like that are not used to stopping, like just all of a sudden pull out gels, bang, drinking a lot, and then just progressing it. But it just, I think it's a very positive thing, particularly for just like overall training recovery. I feel like that's really helped us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In general.
I feel like it is really different. Like in college, that was never a thing. And now it's like, I won't go on a long run without a gel with me, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, there's just so much, like, I don't even know the word for it. The culture in running just for so long was like, oh, like a hungry lion hunts best. Like, you don't need to, like, you don't need that much. Like, it's just really important to just be like as small as possible, like all of this. And I think the more that running kind of becomes science based and less like old school, just go out there and grind and like be hard, whatever, like, people realize that the science really supports being fueled and like having enough carbs and being able to recover and actually absorb all the training.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I think it's super, this like the knowledge, you know, that's like the most powerful thing about it is like, yeah, if all these runners that you look up to are doing it, like, why would you not do it? Because yeah, I think for people that aren't doing it, maybe at times it's like something subconscious where it's like, yeah, I think like maybe if I'm lighter, I'll run better. But also, I think often it's just like for a lot of people, you know, it takes effort to fuel properly and be so prepared. And if you're a busy college student or if you have a job and you're just like getting in the training when you can, like that's one of the things that will potentially, you know, get left behind. But mm-hmm. when you start to realize how much of a difference it makes and how it's like, yeah, I mean, if you're not doing this, you're not getting those full benefits from your training. So it's just like, it's part of training is recovering properly.
Yeah. Whereas I used to kind of have the mentality like part of training is like making sure I don't eat too much. Whereas now it's like part of training is making sure I'm getting in enough. And I think that's kind of the mindset shift is like you should be scared of having too little, not scared of having too much sort of thing.
100%. Well, I mean, we've covered so much good stuff today. Is there anything else that you'd like to talk about?
I mean, I can't think of anything. I didn't come with any questions prepared.
Ollie, anything?
No.
Any shout outs to anyone?
Any shout out? Yeah, shout out to, I actually had a question for you, but it was earlier on and wasn't able to ask it. You talked about when, I know Morgan's gone through this as well, when you're making back to the YouTube stuff, you have situations where like you're just very burnt out and you're very like, you know, very tired from it all. Like what, is there anything that you use to counter that? Like, I know, like, obviously you have Spence there as well. So, like, being able to share that load is also super nice and having someone there that kind of gets it. But is there anything that you've noticed really helps during those periods? Because obviously it's really nice now, but when you want to feel like you still want to get out content, but you're burnt out, you kind of maybe not saying that you've lost like direction, but you're kind of trying to figure out what to do. Like, is there anything that you've noticed helps during those periods where it's like not as, you know, smooth, I guess?
I think I probably need to come up with like a better system for getting through those times. But those are the times where I'm kind of like, okay, just think of it like a job. You just have to like get it done and eventually it'll be fun again sort of thing. And like it always does become fun again. But also those are some of the times where I'll kind of like try to think back and like, okay, maybe right now I don't have like some crazy story to tell, but like what's something I could talk about that I've gone through before that I could bring up now and talk about. So that's kind of when I'll try to do videos about my past or whatever. Or sometimes I'll just like ask people what they want videos about. Because people like filling out surveys, you know. They enjoy having like input in it, and I really appreciate input. So yeah, but I think like my YouTube is such a small, low budget operation that there are definitely aspects of it I could improve, like having more of a like a plan ahead or like an archive of ideas for times when that happens. But honestly, I'm just not prepared.
Yeah, because it is hard. It's hard being consistent. And I think that's one thing that like we've been very, very lucky to have the consistency that we have. But it's also, I think, a lot easier than making the content that you do, because there's a creative output to it. And it's not ours is not saying that we're on a standard kind of schedule with it, but being able to create the content that you create, it's still very, very much like you have to kind of be doing something or create something that's new and layered. And I can imagine that's just hard a lot of the time.
Yeah. I mean, making a YouTube video just takes a lot more time and effort. Like anytime you're in front of the camera, like in a YouTube setting, in a podcast setting, it's a bit more relaxed. But YouTube setting, you have to be like pretty switched on. And like, I mean, sometimes you're just tired. I mean, I've had times where like I was trying to film something, I'm just like, I just can't. Like I'm just not in the mood. Like that stuff is just like, it takes so much behind the scenes. How much do you reckon you are putting into it like a week? Do you have a number or not really? Just grinding every day.
It depends on the video, but usually I'll edit for like 5-6 hours. But like when I do one that's more of a storytelling type thing, it can take me like 20 hours.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And then I also, you know, do Instagram every week. So that's like a few hours every week as well. Yeah. I, for the most part though, enjoy it all. So that's good.
Yeah.
That's very important.
Yeah, that is. Yeah. For 20 hours, like if you're enjoying it, it makes it easier for sure.
Yeah. I love editing too, but sometimes it's just, you get tired and you lose that creative spark, and then it's just like,
yeah,
you got to grind it out though, I guess.
Yeah. Well, how long does it take you guys to edit like a podcast?
A podcast is like nothing. It's like half an hour.
Okay.
It's really easy.
So you don't even watch the whole thing then?
No,
it depends on how much shit I say usually. if I talk mad shit and then there's a lot going on, Morgan's like, fuck, I have to spend another extra 10 minutes looking for Ollie.
Just, have to cut out everything.
Yeah, just cut everything I say. Yeah. Why is Ollie so quiet this episode?
We rarely cut stuff out. Like occasionally we've had to, more in the past, to be honest. Like, but it wouldn't even be like necessarily things that we said. It'd be in the past we used to have like loud noises, like maybe Gus would start barking, like real early days, stuff like that. But the good thing is like I would always kind of know as soon as we finished the podcast, I would already know exactly what I needed to do. And then now some of the, like Tom Wang does a good job of putting graphics like over the videos. So he like fully watches it through and he'll like put stuff on top of it. So now it does get watched before it goes out. But yeah, for a long time, like I wouldn't fully watch the episode and put it out. But I think I don't know.
Something will come up and you're like, that needs to be edited out.
That's like the sort of thing I've heard from most people that make podcasts. They're like, yeah, it's like a pretty low effort editing process. Like obviously you guys have to plan and know what you're going to talk about and stuff. But that is nice.
Yeah.
Because sometimes by the time I post a YouTube video, I've watched it through like 10 times.
Oh, that's how mine are. Because when I edit a YouTube video, I'm super like, everything just needs to flow really nice for me throughout the whole video. So every time I add something on, I'll normally rewatch like the whole video. So that's why I'm so slow. Because it's like, I just So by the time I put a video out, like, I hate the video. You know what I mean?
I do, yeah. I know exactly what you
like
mean.
Do you think musicians are like that too? Like, when probably, they've played or sung a song so many times, it's just like, I freaking hate singing this song.
I can't listen to this again.
Yeah.
I feel like they must think that. Like, when they release an album, they must be like, thank God, I'm never listening to this again.
It's gone. And then they have to go on a tour and perform it a million times.
Yeah.
Particularly if they're, like, doing well. It's like, well, I can't be mad about being successful, but God, I have to sing that song again.
Yeah. I imagine that happens. Oh, the most successful song is the most hated.
Yeah, probably for a lot of people.
Actually, also probably like whatever song it gets really popular was like one that they were like, oh, like it's just kind of a throwaway, like put it on the album, whatever, and then it just pops off.
Do you have things that like when you post a YouTube video that like make a video such that like you know it's gonna pop off, go viral? Or is it still like a bit of uncertainty every time?
I feel like I want to say yes, but I cannot pretend to understand the algorithm. Yeah. Like, there are certain things, like, in general, like, anything that's kind of, like, Olympic trials, Olympics, like, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Putting Olympic in front of it. Yeah.
Yeah, like, people from the general population understand that, like, the Olympics is a big deal. Like, people care about track every 4 years because it's the Olympics, basically. And so, like, those sorts of things, I'm, like, usually if Olympic is in it, that gives me, like, a little boost. But from just a general standpoint, like, I've made some videos that I'm like, this is the best video I've ever made. It's going off.
Yeah.
And then it'll be like 10 out of 10.
Yeah, you never know. Yeah. And by the way, 10 out of 10 is not a good thing in this context, right?
Oh, yeah, no. You want a 1 of 10 because YouTube ranks your last 10 videos. Yeah. And so if you get a 1 out of 10, it's like the first ranked video, getting the most views. Yeah. You get the confetti. It's an endorsement.
There's a confetti?
Rush.
No,
a
YouTube
confetti.
YouTube Studio really like messes with your I don't know, your mind.
Yeah.
They're
I'm
set
like,
up in a way.
You got to like, I'm like, yeah, you try to not look at the analytics, but like if I'm getting the confetti, I stare at that thing all day.
Yeah. That's a side of it that I am like really against, but it's mostly out of laziness. Like if I wasn't doing the podcast, I think, and I was like 100% just like making YouTube videos, I think you have to at some point start paying a bit more attention to that stuff. But I've thought about it. Like, I don't know, like, you could post so many like what I eat in a day videos. Like, maybe those don't pop off in the same way they do, but
I think
they used to
always hit.
They always hit.
But I personally am like, I think most people that watch what I eat in a day videos like don't have a good relationship with food, and it's not necessarily like positive for them to like have a fixation or like compare themselves to me or what I'm eating. So I just don't post them.
Yeah.
Even like a lot of the time I'm really tempted because like I know that it would do well. But I'm like, I don't think that's a positive thing to put out.
That's so smart.
Yeah.
I haven't thought about it like that.
But that's also me. I'm like, I probably don't have like, I'm not probably the perfect example yet. So it's different for everyone. Like, that's not a dig at anyone that posts that content. Like, some people make incredible videos that are like very helpful.
Yeah.
So. It's just, but the self-awareness of that is like pretty commendable because, yeah, so that's stuff you sometimes don't even think about.
Yeah.
So,
How many have you posted many like a day in the life videos?
Yeah, those are like, kind of like my fallbacks if I don't have an idea. Yeah. I try not to do like too many in a row, but my standard like videos that I very commonly post are like workout videos and day in the life videos.
Yeah.
Obviously race videos, and then like other stuff is kind of ideas I come up with. Mm-hmm. But day in the life videos are pretty common, probably once a month.
Yeah. Do you really think people get it? What if you just like, I'm just like saying hypothetically here, what if you just only posted day in the life videos? Do you think people would get annoyed at you, or that'd be fine? Like day in the life video 1, 2, just kept doing it.
This is a Monday. Next time I'll do Tuesday. I mean, I think there's probably like a core group of people that would always watch it and just really appreciate and be like, oh, this is like a comforting video. Like, I know what to expect and I like it. But I do think that there would be kind of like a gradual decline in interest if I'm not, you know, coming up with anything new.
Mixing it
but
up a bit.
I don't know. Also, that might just be me thinking that and it might not be true.
No, that makes a lot of sense. Man, I love talking about YouTube.
It's really fun talking about it to someone that like actually does it. Like,
Yeah. I'm editing a video right now that's like, I'm so bad. Like, I have footage from like a month ago that I'm only editing now, but it's like from my last race video. Yeah. So that'll come out eventually. So there'll be a video from me sometime in the next month, and I'm very excited. But I just like, I have to be like, especially when I'm training hard, like I can't edit after like a big run or a big workout, you know. I have to be very like
Just motivated and energetic.
I just can't be tired pretty much because it does take a lot.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I feel like I try to save my big editing days for kind of easier days.
Yeah, I really schedule it out.
Yeah. But overall, I do love YouTube. I think it's the best form of social media.
I agree. Yeah, I agree. I love YouTube.
How do you approach your Instagram compared to YouTube?
Instagram is like, I mean, I think Instagram can also be fun. I realized that I often don't actually share like much about myself on Instagram, because so much of it is just like following trends and like making reels and kind of like their jokes and stuff like that. So I've been trying more lately to share a little bit more about myself, because I realized my Instagram was like, people like don't even know that I like run professionally.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
People will follow me and think I'm just like, I don't know. Like, not that it's bad for them to not know that, but I'm like, I do want this to be like about myself and stuff. So I've been trying to share more like about myself, but I don't know. Instagram, I'm not a professional at like social media. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. I just kind of make content that I think I would want to see. I just kind of share like what I'm doing and racing and stuff. But it's definitely hard, because sometimes I don't feel super inspired for Instagram, because a lot of the time you just don't get the same like connection that you get from YouTube. I feel like so much of my motivation on YouTube comes from like the community online and how wholesome it is.
Yeah. And you can't tell the same stories on Instagram.
In the Instagram, it's like, I appreciate that it's a cool platform to share on, but I don't feel the same connection, and therefore I'm not always as inspired to make content.
It's tricky. Well, I think who you are as a person and everything is, yeah, definitely matches up very well with YouTube. Like, it makes sense that that's your preferred platform, because, yeah, you can really express yourself well on YouTube.
Yeah. So. I feel like YouTube, I don't have to think of, like, okay, how can I pull someone in 3 seconds? Yeah. Like,
yeah, I hate that stuff so much. Whatever. Well, Ali, thank you so much for coming on today. It's been amazing to have this opportunity to chat to you, and I know everyone listening will have really, really, really enjoyed it. So thank you very much for coming on.
Yeah, it was really fun. I'm going to have to actually listen to your podcast now. I'll become a fan.
That's what we do. We're just pressuring everyone one by one. Yeah. Once we get them on the pod, it's like, oh shit, I have to listen now.
Yeah. My thing with runners usually is like, okay, I'm going to like follow them once I've met them in person. Like, we know each other. Mm-hmm. So now I know you guys, I'm going to be invested.
It makes it much easier, for sure. I mean, I think the funniest thing for us is like, our podcast is called Coffee Club. So then I'm sure people get distracted by the title thinking, oh, this might not be that running related. It's just all running.
I don't know. And one thing that you didn't know that you were signing up for by coming on the show is now you're part of like the Coffee Club Track Club.
Oh, yeah.
So like any of your race results from now on, like, we'll claim as like part of the Coffee Club Track Club. So
any race that I run, like, however well or badly I perform, it is because of you.
We'll take it. Well, thank you. I almost just knocked over the table. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening to this episode, and we look forward to seeing you all again next week. Bye-bye.